navigating personal technology safely, and other advice from tech experts. The big ransomware attack that made global news headlines earlier this month was part of an even bigger trend. According to a Washington Post analysis, ransomware attacks against healthcare providers, municipalities, and schools have doubled from 2019 to 2020. Almost a third of all cyber attacks right now are ransomware attacks. What does this mean for the typical citizen? Is there anything each of us needs to be doing to protect ourselves? Or do we need to depend on companies and institutions to address this concern? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn about the new age of ransomware attacks, but we will also answer your regular technology questions too. Are you thinking about a new smartphone or Wi-Fi system? Our experts will help. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. First, there was the Colonial Pipeline ransomware attack causing gas shortages and lots of questions. Then, earlier this month, a ransomware attack on hundreds of companies across the globe. These are the latest headlines about a growing concern around the world. Today, we're going to learn about ransomware attacks, cybersecurity, and also get questions to your personal technology questions. My guest today, Heather Kelly, who is a technology reporter with the Washington Post, who is based in San Francisco, and Jared Maxfield, the owner of Necessary Technology, based in Portland. As always, we invite your questions and comments. Have you had any technology issues since you've been working from home? Are you thinking it's time to upgrade your laptop or smartphone? You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Heather and Jared, thank you so much for joining us today for Maine Calling. I want to start, though, with Frank Appen, who is on the line with us now, a professor of cybersecurity and project management at Thomas College. Professor, thanks so much for giving us a call.
You're welcome, and thank you for inviting me.
We asked you for the top of the program just to give us a little bit of a primer on ransomware. We keep hearing about these attacks, reading about them in the national newspapers and seeing them on the news. What is a ransomware attack, and how does that differ from another kind of cyber attack?
Well, it enters your organization or your private computer pretty much the same way, clicking on something, or more aggressive attacks for large organizations. And then they encrypt or make your files unusable. And what you find is after some time, your computer no longer has access to its data and even its programs. And more sophisticated attacks would try and make your backups a little difficult as well. And then they literally use extortion, pay the money, or you can't use your computers or your data. And that could destroy a company if they couldn't decide who owes the money and who are their customers.
It's so interesting to me on so many levels, and scary too, but I'm thinking, how is it that they can demand these ransoms for organizations to get the use of their computer systems back? How can they receive these ransoms without them being traced? How does that work?
Well, most of them make use of Bitcoin or Monero, which are cryptocurrencies, which have as one of their facilities the ability to make tracing them very difficult. There are certainly a few ways that if you have a lot of power and you've got a lot of insights that we can sometimes track those. If they make a mistake, as has happened in the pipeline attack that stopped delivery of oil and gasoline to the East Coast, where half the money was recovered by the FBI.
You know, we've heard a lot about yesterday we did a show on international relations, and there was some conversation about how President Biden has asked Vladimir Putin to crack down on the cyber criminals in Russia. Are indeed most of these cyber attacks coming from organized crime within Russia, or not so much?
The ones that have been in the news recently certainly have. And they've been pointed, they've been very clearly targeted at getting money or doing damage in some form that might be useful to a foreign government. But in general, this has been a good money-making effort for cyber criminals. And as it happens, many of those are in Russia. But certainly other countries have used these tactics or facilities, but most of all, it's just a money-making scheme for a lot of cyber criminals.
I read, Frank, the Washington Post, Heather's paper, did an analysis and found that ransomware attacks had doubled between 2019 and 2020. Do you expect that trajectory to continue?
Absolutely. If you are making a lot of money and it's really easy, why would they stop as criminals? So, yeah, I do expect it to continue.
Well, Frank, thank you so much for calling in. Frank Appen is a professor of cybersecurity and project management at Thomas College. Heather, you wrote recently about ransomware attacks and why individuals could be affected by them. This is not just something that companies and big government organizations need to look out for, but individuals as well. Explain what you mean.
It kind of reminds me, I think, a little bit of climate change. It's really hard to convince people something is serious unless it impacts their everyday lives. Ask a regular person to read about cybersecurity and sometimes their eyes glaze over, tell them that they're not going to get any hot dogs or gasoline, and suddenly they're very interested. So it's actually an interesting time for all these things to impact real people because the government is trying to take action. They're trying to kind of use some incentives to get companies to protect themselves. And having a little public outrage or people worried or ambulances running late is kind of helpful for pushing us forward.
So Heather, it's not as much that these bad actors in places like Russia and North Korea are going to come for your personal computer, but they are going to have ransomware attacks on companies that really matter to you and in your daily life.
There used to be a lot more kind of focusing on individuals. People are easier targets. But financially, it just makes a lot more sense to go someplace where you can get $1 million ransom over like a $500 or a few thousand dollar ransom. And I think over time, experts have said those attacks are down and big business attacks are up.
Jared, what are you seeing at your shop? What are people coming into your store with? Are people being hacked still in sort of the old-fashioned ways through phishing emails, or is there a new generation of ways people are being targeted?
It's a lot of the same old, same old. I mean, our number one advice to folks is always be careful what you click on and what you access, because a lot of most of the time, including in some of these large company schemes, it's actually humans and our actions and our habits that are not ideal when it comes to technology. As Heather just mentioned, sometimes not wanting to get up on the education, but it's kind of boring. But frankly, if you're a small business owner, which we've had them come in, and it can be your local plumber, it can be your local family who gets a random ransomware attack, and you won't shut down a pipeline with that, but you might lose all your kids' photos, you know? So it affects everybody. We've also seen recently quite an uptick in the standard scam, where you are sent an email or given a threatening phone call that your $1,000 iPhone that you purchased from Amazon is on the way, and if you didn't make this order, and by the time some folks are done, they've gone to their local store, purchased gift cards, and sent them off to scammers. And I don't know how long we've been doing this show, but we've been talking about that forever. And as the gentleman from Thomas College has mentioned, as long as these things make money, as long as people keep falling for them and having these poor technology habits that'll allow a lot of these things to be opened, it's going to continue. And the best way to, you know, guard against it is to have some education for yourself or for your business, and also just have some strategies around backups. And, you know, I assume the worst and hope it doesn't happen is how we try and prepare our clients.
So Jared, you know, we've read about obviously Colonial Pipeline and other large corporations, hospital systems being held by ransomware attacks. But you're saying that some local businesses that you work with have also had ransomware attacks.
Oh, for the better part of a decade. Yeah, no, you can turn on your regular at-home computer. Usually it's going to be a Windows machine and fully locked down machine that is requesting payment in Bitcoin or some sort of cryptocurrency to unlock your files. That's long before I actually think, as Heather just mentioned, that's probably more on the decline and going after the bigger fish is on the upswing. But for quite a long time, that's been going on. So, and I think probably it started with those small fish, and that's how they worked on and perfected the scheme.
Heather, how has the global pandemic affected this world of cyber security, ransomware? Are we more vulnerable now because we're doing so many more things online?
There are so many more attack vectors. And I think a lot of it was the speed with which we went from being in offices to doing school, work, everything online, happy hours. We just created so many more opportunities and very quickly. And sometimes the proper, you know, process that you would go through to make sure something is secure wasn't always there. Some of these things, especially public schools, you know, there's not always the budget to do anything extra as far as security goes. Schools are actually sort of a distressingly popular target for ransomware because you can't get money out of school districts. And in fact, it's caused snow days, but it's a ransomware day, which I still think is a very dystopian look at the future. So yeah, there's so many more opportunities now. People are constantly online. People maybe are bored and looking at the spam emails promising them a new iPhone more.
If you have questions for our tech experts, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can also reach us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and email talk@mainpublic.org. Heather, is your column one that responds to what you're hearing from your viewers and readers? And I'm wondering, if so, what are the kind of questions that you get the most of?
So we have a columnist named Jeff, and he handles a lot more of the direct readers. I do it too. I would say we've had a lot of popular sort of, they seem like obvious targets, but things like, how do I make my Wi-Fi not suck? And in doing that, you know, my colleague was like, well, let's test your Wi-Fi. Where's your router? I'm like, oh, it's under a metal table. And he just puts his head in his hand. And so that makes your router not work as well. So I'm constantly learning as well whenever we get these reader letters of like, oh, what am I also doing wrong? So that's been a big kick over the past 15 months.
Well, it seems like there are almost two worlds going on. There are the people, but like both of you, Heather and Jared, who are living in this very sophisticated world, mm-hmm. watching what's coming next, trying to figure out how to secure whole systems. And then there are the rest of us who are just making sure we're clicking on the right link for our Zoom meeting, or, you know, not missing the important email while fishing out, you know, weeding out those that could be dangerous. Jared, what is your overall advice for people as we try to navigate this? I mean, it's gotten to the point where it's very difficult to live a typical modern life without the internet.
Oh, without the internet. Absolutely. I mean, everything grinds to a halt. Just to go back to my last point. I mean, my number one advice is it's really the same good life advice anyone gets on anything, which is you have to kind of take a moment and educate yourself. You know, when we work with people coming in, you know, especially when people show up at my store, they're in the middle of some sort of technology crisis and we're there to help them. So we're there to fix the machine, but oftentimes we're there to also help the person, part psychologist, and empower people. I often have folks come in and they frankly will tell me something that I know they can do. I know they can do it. They're smart, intelligent people, and they often say, I can't do it. I can't do it. It's almost a negative, downtrodden feeling towards technology. But we've all been constantly learning new things every day in our life, so including technology. And since it's such an important backbone of everything, I mean, to me, it's as simple as learning how to lock your doors, you know, how to protect your data, and learning some very basic skills and habits that can really, you know, go a long way to protect you. But you know, don't be afraid of it. Technology is not that big, bad beast. It's here to actually make our lives better, make the world a little easier in some ways, not as good in others, but you know, don't be afraid of it. I think that people are smarter than they often give themselves credit for, and a little education will go a long way and make you feel much better about your technology life.
All right, Heather, I'm going to talk about something that is also kind of scary to a lot of people. You have a column recently. Yes, you are being tracked. In what way is the typical person being tracked? And at what point is it something that we ought to be worried about?
The point to be worried about it was probably a few years ago, but now is good too. You know, anytime is a good time to start. Our phones are basically little tracking devices we keep in our pockets. They track our location, what we click on. A lot of it is done, I would say most of it, purely for the purpose of targeting ads, which it sounds like sort of an innocuous thing, like, oh yeah, you can know everything about me. But also people need to consider things like law enforcement can access a lot of that information if you're ever involved in an investigation. There are data breaches, there are hacks, this information is constantly being leaked on the internet. It's sensitive. It tells people a lot about you. Going back to, say, the Ashley Madison hack a long time ago, which was sort of devastating for the people involved. So, I mean, that's another thing. Just like Jared said, it's taking the proper precautions, going into your settings. A lot of it is designed to drive us nuts. Like, it's opt-in. Like, you could take an hour a month to be like, it's time to go through my settings and see which ones I now need to turn on, which is something really frustrating about the way even new privacy protections from the states and the federal government are rolled out.
Yeah. So do you do that, Jared? Do you go into your phone once a month and go through your settings and make sure they're where you want them to be?
You know, as much as I can, but you know, what do they say? The plumber always has the leakiest house. The tech guy might have not the best settings all the time. I try to look at them recently, and I think this is perfect on this topic. I was given, I think for Father's Day, some Apple AirTags because I'm constantly losing things. And AirTags are interesting little devices if people have seen like the Tile and things like that. But what's interesting with the AirTags is Apple and Amazon in another way, but Apple has now created a global network using every iPhone that's on one of the newest operating systems to essentially search the world consistently for my AirTag. My AirTag right now on my keys, my car is being worked on this week, and I actually checked on it, and somebody in the dealership where my car is must have an iPhone or multiple iPhones with Bluetooth on, and they were automatically opted in to be part of this network with one of their last updates. So it's kind of strange, because our phones are being used to essentially create a global tracking network. In reality, when you get down to the technology, it's still quite safe and encrypted, but to Heather's point, opting in and opting out, you know, me personally, I wish we did live more in a world where we had more regulations on allowing people to be, having these companies be much more forthwith and upfront and louder about what these settings are and giving people an option to opt in as opposed to opt out, which is what's going on with some of these newer things. But it's interesting now to see these larger companies using our micro devices like our phones or Amazon Echoes to create larger networks and purposes and hope that it all goes okay.
Well, we are talking about technology, specifically cybersecurity on Main Calling, but we're also here to take your personal technology questions. If you have one, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Main Calling with help from Fresh Eggs Daily, a Maine business committed to helping others raise backyard chickens. From hatching chicks to laying hens, FreshEggsDaily.com, and by Maine State Music Theater, announcing its 2021 season with shows that include Jersey Boys, Cinderella, and more. Tickets at MSMT.org.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk about Facebook, the problems it's created, and the problems it's facing. My guests will be New York Times reporters Shira Frankel and Cecilia Kang, authors of the new book, An Ugly Truth, Inside Facebook's Battle for Domination. They write, Facebook's problems have been features, not bugs. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 8 p.m. here on Maine Public Radio. If you have an Alexa-powered device, like an Amazon Echo or a Google Home Smart Speaker, you can easily find Maine Public Radio whenever and wherever you'd like with a single command. Visit mainepublic.org for helpful tips on accessing Maine Public Radio on your voice-activated device.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today we have tech experts. What are your questions for them about personal technology? With me, Jared Maxfield with Necessary Technology and Heather Kelly with The Washington Post. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to Facebook or to Instagram. A tweet here from Alan. Once a week, I get an email with some spelling or punctuation errors that says I have ordered $400 annual renewal of my Norton security package, which I have not ordered. It invites me to click on a link, which I never do, if I have questions about the order. Have you heard about this one, Heather?
I haven't heard about this specific one, but it sounds like all the classic kind of scam red flags there. And I mean, avoid clicking on anything. If you even question it, as I tell my mom when she calls me once a day to go, should I click on this? The answer is almost always no. Never click. The internet, just look at one page. Don't go anywhere else. Just never click on the emails.
Unless you have ordered something, you remember ordering it, and they're sending a confirmation.
And don't, I just could throw in, and don't forget, there's been studies. There's a science to why those emails are misspelled. You know, it's not, we often look at them and think, oh, it's somebody from out of the country and they don't know how to spell. No, that's actually a lot of thought and logic that goes into it. Because frankly, if you are somebody who reads through that email and gets through it and that doesn't bother you, you might be part of the demographic that they are looking to specifically target and be able to trick with whatever scam they're doing. So it's often by design that you get emails that are in broken English and convoluted like that.
Wow. We'll go to Norris calling from Portland. Hi, Norris. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you very much for taking my call. Hello, all. I have something that's going to sound crazy. I read fairly authoritatively that citizens of former Soviet bloc countries are not targeted by Russian hackers. And the way that they determine that you should not be hacked is that you have a Cyrillic keyboard on your computer. Now, Microsoft will let you put a Cyrillic keyboard on your computer. Anybody can do it. It takes only a moment. Is this something that's worth following up at all?
Heather, have you heard this?
I actually have heard this one. I have heard that, like, oh, add a Cyrillic keyboard to your computer is an option. You don't necessarily have to use it. I haven't read any evidence about how successful it is. I would definitely do, you know, a bit more research into that myself and anybody else interested in trying it. It's a little bit low risk if it's an option that's already on your operating system. It's not like you're downloading something new to do it. But yeah, and I mean, I would also check where the sources are, where this is coming from, trace it all the way back to the origin, and maybe ask somebody like Jared, who might know better than I do on that one.
The only thing I'd throw in is that I have heard the theory of Russians not being targeted as much, who knows, and I haven't heard the one about changing the keyboard, but one thing to keep in mind is oftentimes these programs or these hack ransomware, they might be developed in a place like Russia, but a lot of what these organizations then do is they essentially go on the dark web and essentially lease or rent that software out to any old criminal organization. If MPBN wants to get into the ransomware business, I'm sure there's a dark web site where you can basically get this software and essentially lease it or rent it or buy it from the bad guys and then use it on whoever you want to target. So it's not exclusively, a lot of these things might origin out of Russia specifically, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the end user of these bad programs is going to be from Russia. They could be anywhere in the world. It's available to anybody, essentially.
Norris, thanks for your question. We're going to go to Stephen in Maine right now. Hi, go ahead.
Yes, I appreciate you taking my call. I'm just a truck driver passing through, so I use technology a lot. And I'm wondering what you thought about as far as privacy you talked about in the last segment. What do you think about the search engine DuckDuckGo and how private is that?
Jared, what do you think of DuckDuckGo? And explain for those people who haven't heard about it what it is and how it works.
Well, there's DuckDuckGo and there's other add-ons, extensions, different ways now essentially to search the internet using a browser like DuckDuckGo that purports not to essentially track you and keep all of your information. So, you know, when we're using on a standard day-to-day a Google or a Yahoo or a Bing search, you know, that information is being, you know, archived and cataloged somewhere. As Heather mentioned, I mean, it's all for advertising. You know, ever since TV and radio came, it's still all about selling soap. I mean, that's literally what the whole internet is still about. You know, if something is free on the internet, that means essentially you're the product. That's what they say. So that's, you know, just what you need to keep in mind. And so when you're out searching using a thing like DuckDuckGo, or there's different extensions that you can put on your browsers, I like to use one called Ghostery. That helps block a lot. I mean, if you go to a lot of websites, there's so many cookies and trackers. So that's just, those are different tools you can use to essentially limit the information, the breadcrumbs you're leaving behind on the internet as you do searches.
Spell Ghostery for us.
Ghost, Ghostery, Ghostery.
Okay. Ghostery.
Yeah, and also Adblocker. Adblocker is the big one that people have used, but I added Ghostery. I like that. It's kind of freaky, actually. You go to a lot of websites, and a little on the right side of your screen, it pops up and shows you all the little tracking cookies and tags it's blocking. And it's amazing how many things are being tracked on some websites.
Interesting. Heather, if somebody uses a browser like DuckDuckGo, I'm just trying to get my head around this. Let's say you go to, you're shopping for a new headboard for your bedroom, and you go to DuckDuckGo and you search bedroom headboards. Does that mean that you're not going to be seeing for weeks on end ads for bedroom headboards because you've gone and done your search through DuckDuckGo?
Theoretically, there might be some other ways that companies can pick up on what you're searching for. But yeah, so the idea is through DuckDuckGo itself, it's never going to target search results to you. And I mean, that actually isn't always a good thing for some people. Google would say is when you search Google, it is using everything you searched for in the past, what it knows about you. One example is I might look for headboards and it will show me what's for sale in San Francisco near me. So there are some features that are stripped out when you use DuckDuckGo. It's very straightforward and it's a simple search engine. I would just add to Jared's also Firefox has a tool called, Firefox is another browser you can use by a company called Mozilla. And it has something called a privacy badger, which, you know, I'll go for anything with an adorable like animal name in it. And it does a similar thing. It shows you everything that's tracking you.
So if you click on if you're on Firefox and you just have to open the setting option privacy badger and you'll suddenly see this.
I think it's a plugin that you can just do a little quick search for on the search engine of your choice. And it's also made by Mozilla. So you can download it and turn it on.
Interesting. Stephen, thanks so much for your question. We'll go to Christopher calling from Edgecombe. Hi, Christopher. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello. Thank you for taking my call. So, excuse me, looking for a recommendation here as I am somewhat computer literate, but consider myself illiterate. Anyway, what I'm looking for is a recommendation for something like Privacy for Dummies, something like that, that'll help me navigate all that computer lingo that I just don't understand as far as these, you know, monthly or bi-monthly security settings. Is there anything any of you can recommend?
Oh, Christopher, thanks so much for your question and asking it, because I'm sure there are many, many other people out there who have the same question and don't have the courage to call. So, Heather, what would you recommend? Is there a place that you would recommend people go and to read up one, just get some basic language that very clearly understands the kind of things we're talking about to people who do not live in this world, and then also gives clear updates?
You know, it's a great idea. I'm going to borrow it. a lot of this information is all over the place. And a sort of obvious place to start is with your own kind of whoever's making your computer with, they like Apple, for example, they're using privacy as basically like a marketing thing, but as part of trying to market it, they are adding a lot of privacy features, and they make it very clear in Apple support documents, like this is what you turn on, this is how it works. And so that's actually weirdly a very clear place to start if you're an Apple user. I think Jared could speak a little bit more to the PC side.
Yeah, well, the PC side, same as well, especially people are up to date on a Windows 10. I mean, they made security a lot more transparent. It's really just about knowing, you know, kind of what you're transmitting and what you're sending out there. I mean, the biggest way people are going to send out information or security issues are really going to be through your day-to-day internet searches. So some of the things we were just speaking about, maybe using a DuckDuckGo or using privacy blockers. There is a browser, I forgot about, a browser called the Brave browser, which is actually completely like through the browser itself. It's not a Google browser. It's not a Microsoft browser, so that, you know, you're leaving less information behind. If you're behind a wireless router, most of the time your wireless router and your default systems will have firewalls set up. So in terms of a good place to go, like Heather, I mean, there's so much information. I always tell people rely on YouTube. You know, try and, you know, start with YouTube with a basic video. If I'm at home and something breaks in my house, that first thing I, how to fix a furnace, you know, I don't know what to do. I go to YouTube and try and find some information. So if you have basic, you know, basic Windows 10 security settings, some, you know, start with keywords and find a 2-minute video or a 20-minute video. You can get as in-depth or as non-in-depth as you want, but it's just beginning to, you know, kind of educate yourself. But, you know, the thing that scares you the most, the internet, is also the thing that has all the answers for the thing that scares you the most. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, but I like to turn people to YouTube and try and find a video that you can pause, rewind, and do at your own pace and learn what you want to learn.
What about a resource in terms of just general information? For example, I'm thinking about, you know, if I were diagnosed with diabetes, I might turn to the Mayo Clinic or the Harvard Health website. Is there some place that is really sort of a good, solid, well-researched place to turn?
I mean, the Washington Post has excellent privacy coverage.
Well, of course.
A lot of it is kind of siloed into publications, which is interesting. Like, you know, the Verge is something if you really want to get in depth on the gadget side. It's, you know, Wikipedia, weirdly, not going to help you here. It is kind of scattered all over based on what you're using. Like, you're going to find pages dedicated entirely to iPhone privacy and security. So you kind of have to cobble together, like, what do you have and what do you want to start with? Your computer, your phone, your internet, and go from there. There should be like a WebMD for privacy. I like that idea.
Oh, Christopher, thank you so much for your question. We'll go to Jay, who's also on the road. Hi, Jay. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I'm wondering if this is a trend or it's just happening in my world. I was the victim of a Facebook hack, but not just the one where you change your password and everything is okay again. They managed to seal me off from my own account so I could log in, but I couldn't get access to it. Then they went after PayPal. Then they went after my bank account, and it happened to another friend of mine, and then another friend of mine before it happened to me. And what they would do is they would make purchases to either Facebook Marketplace or Facebook ads. I'm not sure how they make money on that, but the thing was is that it made sense that they did that, because when you dispute the charges, PayPal or even a bank will tell you, well, your issue is with the seller, your issue is with the merchant. Well, if it's Facebook, there's nobody to get a hold of. I mean, there's nobody to resolve that dispute with. So
Jay, I want to get this clear. So somebody hacked you through Facebook and then started charging things based on using your PayPal?
Yes, and sealed me off from my account so I could log in, but I could not get the code that gave me their Facebook's attempts supposedly to try to protect me is actually what walled me off from my own account. So I can't even delete that account.
And I know I cut you off. Did you say that you lost your business because of this?
Well, I have to. I'm now having to close my business account and open up a new one, because a lot of these merchant help sites like PayPal and Venmo they don't just go on a debit card. They need or want your bank account number. So my question is, have they heard of this more onerous slew of hacks going on? And secondly, I just want to chime in that I resent the fact that the answer, and I don't blame your guests, but the answer to nearly all of these questions about protecting yourself from being overrun like I was is more things that I have to do rather than making these companies take more ownership of the fact that people are going to get hacked and you need to provide better protection and better access to your own product. I know we're not customers. I know we're the product, but it can't always be more that I have to do, or else a lot of people are just going to stop using this stuff.
Heather, I see you nodding.
And no, it's absolutely a pet peeve of mine as well. It's very much the whole don't use plastic straws approach, like putting it on the individuals to try and solve a problem that's actually way beyond them. And then my advice, unfortunately, is you know, never use Facebook login or Google login. Don't use these tools to log into multiple sites. Have an individual login for everything. But it is really common to sort of hack people in a chain through this, to use one to get to another, to another, to another. I think this was the infamous like iCloud hack a few years ago too. So, absolutely, this is a huge problem, and it does keep falling on individuals. And I mean, everybody here is pretty tech savvy, but like, especially, you know, some older internet users, I'm constantly dealing with parents and grandparents of, they don't know how to undo this. They don't know how to get the help. They don't know where to start. And it is something that the companies aren't adequately addressing. I also agree with that.
We're talking about technology, personal technology on Maine Calling. If you have a question for our experts, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page or to Instagram. We will be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Cape Integrative Health, committed to working with Medicare patients to treat chronic lower back pain with acupuncture. Learn more at capeintegratedhealth.com. And by Woodford F&B in Portland, now offering patio dining and curbside pickup 7 days a week. Menu at woodfordfb.com.
I'm Don Gagne. Irish writer Susan McKay thinks that Northern Ireland, created 100 years ago by Great Britain, might not last another 10 years. She joins us to talk Brexit, the scrambling of old divides, and talk of reunification. That story and an update on the situation in Haiti, next time on Here and Now.
Stay with us. Here and Now, upcoming shortly at 12 noon today here on Maine Public Radio. Have you subscribed to The 10? The 10 is Maine Public's free weekly e-newsletter, our curated look at 10 exceptional, thought-provoking, and compelling stories. These stories are not necessarily from the front page, but rather those that you may have missed during the week from Maine Public, NPR, PBS, the BBC, and more. To sign up or to check out past issues of The 10, please visit mainepublic.org.
And welcome back. This is Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. We are talking about personal technology today. My guest, Jared Maxfield with Necessary Technology in Portland, and Heather Kelly with The Washington Post. She is joining us from San Francisco. Heather, thanks for getting up early for us. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. So Heather, let's talk about something that's not technically a personal technology question, but so many of us who have children have had those children spending a lot of time in front of screens by necessity over the pandemic. So let's talk a little psychology now as we move out of this era and we're probably going back to school in person in the fall. What is your advice for parents about screen time?
So I would also be one of these parents, I'll admit. I and a lot of parents have discovered that it's a lot easier to add screen time to your kid's life than it is to subtract it. Just try telling a kid, hey, I know I gave you a Nintendo Switch for the pandemic. It was temporary. It's just chaos and tears. And so a big struggle for a lot of parents right now is like, how do we get back to a world where they're not just, you know, on a screen all the time? And one thing that's come up a lot is to literally just take them outside, take them anywhere where it's not tempting, it's not nearby. I talked to a guy who runs a fishing camp, and he'll take people's kids fishing for like 8 hours a day, and the kids love it. And phones are only allowed to take a picture of your catch. And yeah, it's turning out to be just sort of this really difficult time right now, and a lot of parent and child relationships. And we really hope that schools, if they're able to open fully in the fall, that will also be a good break and a good time to reset a little for us all.
Jared, what about you? You fall into this demographic as well, don't you?
Yeah, I've got a 7-year-old at home who spends more time with my iPad than I do. So, or each other. I don't know. It's been a long year, hasn't it? But others are, I mean, it's right. It's tears and chaos, but that's what we do. You know, you need to get them outside, because what is remarkable is I think once they're instantly disconnected, you know, when they're freaking out, it's no more iPad time. It's in the moment, but get them outside, get them distracted, and it instantly just evaporates. I mean, it really does. So, but trying to wean that time back, because also, especially the last year with school, a lot of kids' school's been in front of a screen. I mean, the whole, you know, their whole life is in front of a screen. So social time might be in front of a screen, work and school time's been in front of a screen. So it's going to be a social experiment, I guess, a lot of us are taking part in. So finding that happy balance.
We'll go to Ash from Bangor. Hi, Ash. Go ahead.
Hi. I use a tool called Distractify. It's similar to Ghostry in that it will block ads for you, but it also clicks on basically everything that's presented to you to make your data, you know, basically useless in terms of tracking. Have either of you used that? Do you have any thoughts on it?
Distractory.
I haven't heard of that one. I'm definitely going to look it up. I thought you were going to say there are some extensions you can put on browsers that will help you not be distracted by limiting what you can have open. So that, I thought that's where you're going, but that sounds really interesting. I had not heard of it, but I'll certainly check it out.
All right, Ash, thank you so much for calling in. We'll move on to Maura calling from Norway. Hi, Maura, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I'm an Apple product user, and I am that kind of person who once a month goes over everything, all privacy settings on my phone and my computer, and turns off all the tracking. You know, it turns everything to off. So you mentioned that earlier, but my question is, as an Apple product user, I'm under the impression that Apple uses a level of encryption and holds privacy standards to a higher level than, say, Microsoft. Is that the right impression? Am I accurate in that? And would you say that Apple products are probably the safest choice for those who are concerned about privacy and encryption?
Thanks for that question, Maura. Heather, do you have an answer?
Yes, and I'm interested actually to hear what Jared has to say as the person who actually sees the computers that have been compromised more. But I mean, yeah, Apple is absolutely investing in privacy, and that's because it helps it sell more devices that also maybe track us a little bit. So it's in its best interest to make those privacy settings work. You know, a lot of them still need some improvement. I personally, I'm using Apple products mostly for that reason, but also because Windows just drives me insane.
Yeah, I can agree with all of that. And yeah, I do tend to find, I mean, A, on a logistical on the ground basis, seems to be Apple users tend to have less issues when it comes to specifically some of those nastier things like malware, ransom attacks. I mean, viruses, Trojans, the things we would typically worry about on Windows machines, we don't really see and worry about for the most part on Apple products. Apple's built around security. You know, that is a big thing they push. I mean, that's, and one of the latest updates that came out on the phones actually recently really helped actually give users a new level of privacy against tracking from a lot of the advertisers, the Facebooks of the world. So that's going to be a new tech battle. You know, what can you track and who controls it? But Apple, that's how they build it. But that's also the thing that bothers people, is because they do have a closed ecosystem and control their products and their hardware and their software, unlike a Microsoft, which will license it to whoever wants to build the computer. So it's a double-edged sword, but I believe in their security, and I'm also pretty much an Apple user as well.
Maura, thanks so much for the question. An email here from Jack. What is the dark web? Is it illegal? And if so, can it be shut down? There's a big question. You want to start, Heather?
What is the dark web? I am going to have a terrible explanation here. It's basically just kind of a part of the internet that isn't what you're going to find through Google. You need a sort of a special kind of browser to find these things. A lot of shady things happen on the dark web. A lot of sort of ransomware companies are on there. You can find countdown clocks for companies that have had their data taken. Do I fully understand the dark web? The answer is no. Apparently, I do not.
Jared, the other parts of his question, is it illegal and can it be shut down?
No, it's. I mean, is it illegal? I mean, it's the internet. I mean, it's like in Maine, we have the highway system. I mean, we all mostly use the highways. If you go 6 hours north, you have some unregulated territories with old back roads. To me, that's the dark web. So anybody can get there. We all have the tools to do it. It's just kind of the know-how, and it's definitely, you know, you're not going to find dark websites through your Google results, but it's where nefarious things go down. So your ransomware, people's information is sold, all kinds of things, but it's essentially, it's the part of the internet, and definitely governments and law enforcement track the dark web and are on the dark web and trying to find these things, but it's essentially just it's a part of the internet. It's the internet, just a place most of us don't go.
I think a less philosophical.
It's not a great situation. I'm sorry.
That's okay. And I'm not going to correct you because I don't have an answer either. This tweet, I'll send this one to you, Jared. I think you'll be able to answer. I've recently moved and now seem to need a cell phone extender / booster for the new house. What to look for while searching for such a booster? Already turned on Wi-Fi calling. Tens of thousands of people in Maine have trouble with cell service in their home?
We don't have great broadband and we don't have some great coverage in some places. I don't have great advice for this. Usually I tell folks you got to start with your phone provider, AT&T, Verizon, whoever it may be, and find out what they offer essentially to supplement their network, either through your home internet or some other device, portable booster or something like that. But there's not a lot of options, unfortunately, when you're off the grid or don't have a great signal. But you gotta start with your carrier and see what they offer, because they're usually your number one.
All right, we'll go to Lynn calling from Portland. Hi, Lynn, go ahead.
Hi,
Lynn. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I have two questions. One is about software to save passwords. I've got a spreadsheet with 5 pages of them, and I'd like something a little more secure. And the other question has to do with VPN. I used to use it when I worked remotely, and now I don't have access to that. Is there a good VPN software to use?
Heather, you want to tackle those?
Yes. So for the VPN, I'm not sure, you know, what the good software is to use these days. There's NordVPN. I mean, one question is, why do you need it? It's going to be, you know, if you're on a public Wi-Fi network and you want some extra security there, that's a good reason. If you hypothetically want to watch the Olympics for less money as it's broadcast in other countries, that is a good reason to get the VPN set up now. Jared might have an idea of some actual good companies to do on that.
Well, Nord's the big one. I mean, there's a lot of VPN companies out there. There's free VPN services and there's paid VPN services. So to Heather's point, I think you need to decide how important it is, and then basically base your budget off that, whether you want to actually pay for a subscription for a full boat service, or you can get down to ones that are essentially free extensions to use off of a browser. So why and where? I mean, we've talked about before, one reason to use it at home is now if the ISPs can collect information, if you're that interested in keeping off the grid or leaving less behind, that's another way to do it.
Heather.
Was there a second part to the question?
Yeah, I forgot about the first part.
I was going to say it's software for saving passwords.
Password manager. I'm actually not that against low-tech password management systems. I use something like 1Password. I think they're pretty great. Also Apple, if you use an Apple system, it has Keychain built in, which is its own kind of password manager that's getting better. If my advice is, if you have somebody kind of older or somebody less tech savvy and you're trying to hook them up with a password management system, if they live alone, if they're in a secure place, I actually have nothing against giving them a little book and writing it down in there. It's not the end of the world. You've got to consider people's own like threat situations. And, you know, grandma isn't really going to be hacked by somebody breaking into her house and looking at a piece of paper next to her computer.
Yeah. And an address book is a great one because then it's already alphabetized for you, Jared.
100%. That is, I love the low tech. I tell my customers the best thing you could have is a small spiral bound tiny notepad buried away somewhere. And that reminds me, I'd like to give out one tip, because we talked about when the gentleman talked about getting locked out of Outlook or not Outlook, Facebook or different places. Oftentimes what people need to do, we've all been through this, is when you click on the forgot your password link, they want to send you a reset password somewhere. Well, what happens all the time, and I would tell folks, if you want to look at one setting today, here's my tip of the day. Go into your Facebook accounts and your Amazon accounts and your important accounts. Look at your contact settings. Because oftentimes what will happen is you set up your Facebook account 10 years ago with your old main.rr Roadrunner account that you no longer have. So Facebook will then, to verify who you are, try to send confirmation credentials to an account you no longer have access to. And that really opens up a big can of worms for people, because they can't simply get a text message or an email to current credentials. So you want to make sure your contact information on all of your important accounts is updated to something that's current and you have access to, because when you get locked out of some of these things, it can be a real nightmare to try and get back in.
All right. And Heather, I'm going to put you on the spot because we have about 30 seconds left. Do you have a tip of the day for all the listeners?
Oh, goodness. You know, put on two-factor authentication when it's offered on any site. It's super easy. You get a code texted to you. It can help prevent hacks. And then my other tip is go outside and leave your phone at home. I'm trying to do this once a week and I find it very soothing. So I recommend it for everybody.
You find it soothing and not stressful?
Like even if my phone is nearby and I know I can look at it, I'm going to look at it. If it's in my house and it's a few miles away, I just don't feel its weight on me, you know, anymore.
Well, thank you both for joining us today. The voice you just heard, Heather Kelly, technology reporter for The Washington Post. I put one of her columns on our Facebook page today. And Jared Maxfield, the owner of Necessary Technology. Today's sound engineer was George Thomas. Main Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Today's program will be rebroadcast tonight at 7. And tomorrow on the program, Maine's Attorney General Aaron Fry is going to join us to discuss a wide range of issues that his office is currently dealing with. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.